never the underdog. Yes, sir. It's never the underdog. Yes, sir. Final four now.
What's up, Duke fans? Welcome to the Devil's Den podcast. I'm your host, Josh Smith, here with my co-host, Raul and Shu. We got a special guest today. Got Desmond Johnson with us. Des is the owner of Tobacco Road Sports Radio and host of the Believe in Carolina Panthers podcast. He also does the Rundown with Desmond Johnson. You can find that at 10 a.m. on Saturdays if you're in the Triad area, WWBG 1470 a.m., so doing things a little bit different this week with it being the rivalry, Duke Carolina in the Final Four. Wanted to get a Carolina guy in here and just kind of process what this stuff looks like, what it's going to mean. Not to bury the lead too much, though. So Duke's going to tip at around 850, 849 after the Villanova-Kansas game on Saturday. A little kind of fun fact, we've actually never played in a Final Four game in New Orleans. Carolina has a little bit of kind of historical mojo there, if you're familiar with 82 and 93 down there in the Bayou. So they got that going for them. But we're going to jump into it a little bit here with Dez. And my first question is kind of how the both teams got here, right? And so for Duke, it was kind of bouncing back after that dramatic senior night collapse, and then again against Virginia Tech getting blown out in the ACC tournament. Most Duke fans, and I think kind of national types, were kind of trending out on Duke, right? It was kind of leading up into, is this just another one of these first weekend kind of one and done outs, right? So to get here is, you know, pretty special for us being K's last season. It's always nice to kind of play into the final weekend. It's the best sporting event in the world to me. So anytime I get to follow it all the way through, it is just special. But Des, for UNC, how did y'all get here? I mean, I know the bubble thing was going on. Like, what has this ride been like for you?
It's been wild. It's been really up and down this year. It's crazy because I feel like I've been in more arguments with Tar Heel fans than Duke fans this year, based on Hubert, the rotation, they're too soft. We were not supposed to be blown out by 20 to the likes of Wake Forest and Miami and all these other things. And just for some reason this year, I've just kind of stayed the course with this team and just understood like what Hubert was dealing with. I mean, this is the same core that went 18-11 last year and lost in the first round of the NCAA tournament. So I came into it with expectations kind of tempered, you know. I thought they had the talent to be a top four team in the ACC, and I never backed off of that, but I'd be sitting here lying if I thought that this team was a Final Four team at any time during this season. I have felt more comfortable with them probably the past 4 weeks or so, probably since the beginning of February, I guess. It would probably been right after the Wake Forest loss, probably somewhere in there. The Pitt loss was just kind of an abnormality. It was just a weird loss, but really ever since then, so that was February the 16th, Carolina's been playing really well. And I've gone into each game instead of kind of hoping they play well, more expecting them to. And it feels like they just kind of figured stuff out. Like they figured out, okay, we need one ball handler. So RJ became the point guard instead of, you know, passing it back and forth. Caleb Love became the two, which is more of his natural position instead of shoehorning him into the point guard position. Brady Manick became a starter, you know, during that stretch, which I think was huge because Dawson Garcia was starting. A lot of people forget that. And he just wasn't really fitting in the offense. Once Manick got into the starting lineup, the team kind of took off and Hubert decided to, you know, not play some guys like Kerwin Walton and, you know, guys that got some run last year at the beginning of the year. He made the hard decision to cut that rotation down drastically. He's literally playing six and a half kids, pretty much, it feels like. Puff might get out there. Dontre Styles might get out there. Justin McCoy might get out there if Baycott's in foul trouble. But other than that, that's it. Like, he doesn't go any deeper than that. And they've just kind of gelled on that since then. And they're playing really good ball. Like, I feel like Carolina starting five can beat any of the other three starting fives in this Final Four. And I wouldn't have been able to say that over a month ago. So it's pretty amazing what they've been able to do to flip this around.
And the style that they're playing, right? It almost reminds me of like some of the like late 2000s Duke teams, four out, one in, bunch of shooters. Let's spread it. We're going to shoot 35 30 to 35 threes. Like, 0-1 Duke was that, right? We got Boozer down there like Baycott, but then we got four dudes out here who can kill you.
It's crazy because it's like it's reversed. Like, the stuff that, you know, we've all been, you know, going back and forth with each other on Facebook for how long has it been? Like a decade, it feels like now.
A long time, man.
My thing used to always be, you guys shoot threes and you run with short rotation. And ours was we can't shoot threes and we're just throwing the ball up there playing volleyball and rebounding everything. And that was kind of the stick for both teams. Now it feels like Duke has all the interior play and Carolina shifted to this 3-point thing. And I think it's been kind of a shock for both fan bases in terms of the style of play. For Duke, though, I will say playing that way will allow them to keep players longer than 1 year. I mean, you got a guy like a Mark Williams that, you know, if he comes back for his junior year, he's gonna be a monster.
I wish.
You know, just doing what he's doing, but I don't think you're gonna be able to keep him. I mean, I think he's played himself into a first round pick. So
yeah,
it's just nuts, man. How lucky are we? Like, really, how lucky are we even to have something like this? This is not Kentucky Louisville. This is not Alabama Auburn. This is not Notre Dame USC. Like, you name it. This isn't even Celtics Lakers. Like, this is something deeper. Like, the fan bases are intertwined with each other. We're neighbors with each other. We work with each other. We went to school with each other. Like, we clown each other on social media hour after hour, but then we can all sit down and have wings together and it's not that big of a deal. And I don't know if that exists in other rivalries that are out there. So this is really special. The nation's about to see something that has never been done before that we've kind of had our whole lives. So for that part, I'm really excited about that because the both teams will deliver. I'm pretty sure about that.
There is no little brother or stepbrother in this rivalry, right? It's like coming together.
Neither one of us are NC State. No. Neither one of us are NC State.
Right. And, you know, I'm hoping that nationally, and not that it hasn't in the past, but this is, I think, really going to just sit the lead up, the coverage going into it. And I've seen some stuff about like the Final Four, like we have 17 total titles and it's like, yeah, but you got 11 on one side, right? You got 11 over here on our side, right? Mm-hmm. Over a quarter of the last like several, I think it goes back to, it's like 38 or 40 years, 28% of the time Duke or Carolina has won it all.
There was
like 1-4. Like, that's wild.
It's crazy too, because you were talking about early 90s earlier, when we first, or before we got on. And I remember we did a bit on my show where we went back and looked from K's first title. If you want to talk about like a true rivalry, whenever one of these teams shows up in the Final Four, the national championship, odds are the other one's going to show up the next year. And if you go back and look at the pattern, 91, 92, Duke repeats. 93, Carolina wins national championship. 94, Duke is back in the national.
We tried to, yeah. You know, like,
it's crazy like how it's gone like that. Even if you just do Final Fours, Carolina in the Final Four in 2000, Duke's in the Final Four, wins it all 2001. 2004, you guys are in there.
9 and 10,
we win it. 2009, we win it. 2010, you win it. You win it 15. In 15. We go back 16 and 17.
I thought we dodged a bullet there. I was like, oh, we broke the curse in 16. I was like, thank God we somehow, and then they come back and do it again.
That whole year was a business trip. It was just a business trip. And that team, that 2017 Carolina team is still my favorite to this day, just for the journey. Like, that team made me a grown man. I was 40 something years old, made me weep in my living room, like on three separate occasions, good and bad. From the Luke May shot to the Chris Jenkins shot to them actually finishing it off. Like, it was just like an emotional ride that I didn't really have with any of the other title teams from Carolina. And those guys, like, I know Theo Pinson. Like, I've met Justin Jack. Like, I knew those guys. So, like, from working in sports media. So, like, I kind of knew them. And that one was, like, the sweetest one after everything that they had gone through and those guys coming back with just the goal to do that. And then to beat Gonzaga, who I call the fake Duke of the West Coast, that was pretty sweet too. Like, I think Gonzaga is like, to me, Gonzaga is like 88 Duke. Like, they're starting to get top recruits now. They just still haven't leaped over that hurdle. Yep. And I don't know if they're going to get a chance to. But right now they feel like late 80s Duke, where Duke just kept going to Final Four, Final
88,
Four,
Final 89, Four. 90.
Yeah. Barry and those guys couldn't stand.
86
couldn't
before stand. That, we got beat by Louisville. It took like five knocks before the door finally opened for us, right? But,
funny story. I was almost a Duke fan. Like, I almost became a Duke fan as a kid because of that 86 team. I didn't really have a team. In 86, I was 8 years old. So I was just an ACC fan. My dad, you know, played at High Point. Was an all-state player here in North Carolina in high school. So I grew up around basketball, and he's a big Carolina fan. Like my parents' house is painted Carolina blue. And Wake was always number two, which it feels like it's like that for everybody. Wake is always the second favorite team. So we watched everybody. And in the 80s, it felt like every team in the ACC had a dude. Like, so when you would watch those Jefferson Pilot quadruple headers on Saturdays, it'd be like Rodney Rogers and Wake Forest against Brian Stith in Virginia. And then it's going to be Corciani and them boys from State taking on Barry and Duke. And then, you know, like Kenny Smith and Carolina against, you know, whoever at Georgia Tech. Like, it was just felt like every team had somebody, and we all knew who they were. And that 86 team, I was a huge fan of Johnny Dawkins. Like, he was one of my favorite players. And if it wasn't for Purvis Elson and Louisville pulling that off, I might be sitting here as a Duke fan today, which is a scary thought. like, I don't know how that would even play out. But because of that game, it left my fandom open. And then the 89 ACC championship was when I pledged allegiance to Carolina. And it's been on from that point on, which is actually on my list of favorite Carolina Duke games of all time. So you almost had me.
Yeah, that's I think a lot of us have similar stuff, because, like, you know, my family growing up here, it's very split, right? All my mom's side, Carolina, my dad, my grandpa were Duke. But it's just, you don't get that. I mean, Lakers, like you said, Lakers Celtics, right? Separate code. Even Louisville, Kentucky, not even the same conference.
They just met in the Final Four, what, a couple years ago? 4 or 5 years
yeah.
ago?
Yeah,
they did. It didn't feel like it was anywhere close to what this is going to be.
Mm-mm.
So,
you can't recreate this, and it's so. And we were talking off mic too. It's so unique that it happens to be Case 13th and final, and Hubert's first. And but we're still coming in with all that history, all that blue blood kind of mentality. How are they going to handle this, you think, for both sides? How do you think Kay handles this, kind of being the last coming in, and how does Hubert approach it, kind of being the first as the coach?
Honestly, I think it'll be easier for them to approach it, which sounds strange, but them playing at a neutral site allows them to kind of tell their players, don't treat this as a rivalry game. Because if you treat this as a rivalry game, you're going to get sucked into all the pageantry and history and everything else. You're going to be looking up at the crowd and seeing Vince Carter sitting up there and Christian Laettner and everybody else. This isn't a rivalry game. This is a Final Four for the chance to go play for the national championship. It just so happens to be your biggest arch rivals on the other side. Which should be easier for us, because it should be easier to plan because we know you, and vice versa. So it's not like we're going into this blind. It's like playing, you know, your buddies up the street in basketball. You've been playing them every day. Like, I mean, you know them. Like, these kids know each other. They go to the same barbershops, eat the same places. So it almost might make it an even more relaxed game, because you're playing against the enemy you know, as opposed to the enemy you don't. And to me, that means we're in for a really good game. Like, I don't expect one team up by 15. I don't expect these huge ebbs and flows. Like, I feel like it's going to be tight all the way through, but not tight because the players are tight, just tight because both teams are just both playing at the top of their games at the same time. And America's going to be lucky enough to see it happen on primetime television on a Saturday night. On WrestleMania weekend for some reason, but I won't go into that. That's my own.
It's also a dream. Dreamville Festival is going on in Raleigh. So
see, you know, what's happening?
Like, Cole's a big Carolina fan. I mean, he's going to miss that.
Is he? So he's not going to,
he's not going to pull an Eric Church. Oh. Yeah. I haven't heard that, you know, so maybe he does, maybe puts the game on a big screen on the other side of the,
that would be hot. No, I could see him actually trying to do that too. That would be crazy.
But that speaks to what we're talking about, right? Like, I don't really follow Eric Church or know much about it, but either way, he had a concert in Texas, right? And he pretty much just said, I'm out. I'm going to the Final Four to watch Duke. That's what we're talking about.
Dude. I mean, we don't know if this is going to ever happen again. We didn't think it was ever going to happen. So I don't blame him at all. I feel bad for, you know, me and my wife were on Twitter earlier this morning. She was reading through some of the tweets, and people were like, you know, I reserved a hotel room and all this other stuff. Like, it's beyond just the tickets. And apparently Eric Church don't care.
Yeah, he didn't even go to Carolina.
He went to App.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Which is like the most Carolina thing possible, that he's going to the Final Four for Duke Carolina. He didn't go to either one. He went to App State. So that just tells you what the rivalry is right there. Like, this is bigger than an Eric Church concert.
What kind of message has Hubert been preaching in his press conference? I didn't listen to it, but I did listen to Kay's, and he said exactly kind of what you were saying there. Like, don't look at it as a rivalry game. this is a game for the privilege of going to the national championship. And I was wondering if Hubert had kind of said the same thing.
He did. They pretty much, both Kay and Hubert both pretty much said verbatim the same stuff that Hubert's been saying, you know, we've got blinders on. He's been saying this for all year, but it really started to stick the past month and a half. Keep your blinders on. Don't listen to all this interference from the outside. I promise you both teams probably have some sort of social media ban or something this week, so they're not listening to the chatter and all this other stuff. Just focus on what got us here. Family together. And this applies to both sides. I joke all the time about the brotherhood and all this stuff, but it is similar to the Carolina family and what Dean originally initiated, you know, 40 years ago or whatnot. It's the idea that if all five of you are playing together, we can go beat anybody. But it's when one guy's playing off by himself or trying to raise his draft stock or whatever it might be, those are the teams that struggle at Duke and Carolina. But when you get an instance like this, when the rotation is playing tight and everybody knows their roles, that's when you start getting Duke in the Final Four, Carolina in the Final Four, national championships, banners, all that kind of stuff. And sometimes it takes a while for these kids for it to click that, you know, it's not about me. We've been dealing with it with I don't want to call him out, but like Caleb Love, for example. Like, he came in with such high expectations to be an NBA draft pick. I think it really made him take shots that he normally wouldn't have took in the flow of a game. And by taking him off the ball, it's made it where, yeah, he'll still jack up a bunch of shots, but that's kind of what makes him who he is. Like, if he didn't jack up a bunch of shots the first half of the game after, my mind just went blank. UCLA. When he went off in the second half for like 27 points, anybody else would have stopped shooting after the first half he had, but he's not that type of player. And Hubert's not the type of coach to tell him to stop shooting. That's the thing, that these kids on the Carolina side have bought in 100% to Hubert Davis and what he's doing. And I just think back to all the people in the beginning that wanted Wes Miller over Hubert Davis and didn't understand why Hubert Davis was the only pick. Like, it's why John Shire is the best pick for Duke. Like, you can't just parachute a guy in here and expect them to do what these programs do. These programs are above everyone for a reason. They do certain things that other programs don't do. They emulate each other. It's like spotting somebody in the gym. And if you dropped in Wes Miller over here for this, I can promise you we wouldn't be in the Final Four. And there'd probably be a mutiny on the team at this point, just because you're changing what the program is. And I'm not worried about Duke next year. I mean, hell, you got the number one recruiting class coming in next year without Kay. I'm more worried about Kay doing a Tom Brady and saying, you know what, we're gonna run this back. Like, if we beat y'all on Saturday in his press conference, I'm like, you know what, I'm feeling pretty good. I talked to Mickey, we're gonna run this back, we're gonna do this Tom Brady thing, and I'm gonna come back one more year. And then Shire will just throw papers in the air and walk off. But that's my only fear this weekend, is Kay not retiring. I'm ready to see him go. He needs to go enjoy his grandkids.
Yeah, you touched on it a little bit there. What for Hubert, this being not just the Final Four, but getting here in that first year, you talked about some of the kind of dissent within the Carolina fandom, right? Of like some of the stuff going on there. What do you think this means for him to kind of, it's not like the I told you so kind of, but there's got to be something there that's, I'm meant to be here, right? Like, I'm worthy of this spot.
I don't know if Hubert even is wired that way. He's never really let that kind of stuff bother him, because he's not on social media either, so he doesn't see a lot of this stuff. But I did read an article, an interview with Roy Williams. I think it was on The Athletic. It might have been Brendan Marks that did it. And Roy was the one that was like, you know, I saw all the things at the end of the year that we made a bad pick, and Hubert's too nice of a guy, and the program's going to suffer, and all these other things. And Roy was like, I knew deep down, just from watching him and him sitting beside me every day for 9 years, that he was the pick. Like, and I knew it might take some time, but he was just so proud of the job he did. I don't know if Hubert pays attention to that outside noise like that. I know Kay does. Like, I know Kay hears and sees all. So, like, he knows when, like, a 24-year-old writer from, wherever, Wilson or wherever, made a comment about one of his players 8 years ago, and now they're sitting in the press room. He knows that kid. He knows that kid and what they said. And he's going to bring it up. He's going to bring it up in a way that that kid's going to not feel good about themselves when it's over with. But that's just the nature of these coaches and the rivalry and what it is. So I don't think Hubert's paid much attention to the outside stuff. I think Hubert's just been driving this car, and the road just got clearer. So it's making it where he's like he did something different. He's been doing this from the beginning of the season. It just, the results didn't come in at the very beginning, and Carolina fans can be really impatient when it comes to stuff like this. I think a lot of them were really worried about the program. I was never worried. I thought Hubert was going to be the head coach for the past, I don't know, 8, 7, really since he got there. I figured, why would you leave a cushy job at College Game Day just to be an assistant coach and a JV coach at Carolina? There has to be more. And it ended up being that way. He's basically getting groomed to take over. And I can't be more prouder for him, to be honest.
It's a cool moment for him, for sure. And like, even being on this side of the rivalry, there's a lot of kind of like, I appreciate it for him, right? Like, I hate it for you to get to be here, right? But I appreciate it for him. You know, it's that kind of like that respect piece again, where we both kind of understand where we fall. Let's pivot and talk about, for the fans though, the significance of it. So I believe this is the 258th time that we'll play, first ever in the tournament, right? And there's always kind of been this opinion of, yeah, they've never played in the tournament, and both sides were always kind of, we shouldn't, right? It should never happen. We should just keep it that way. It creates this kind of trump card. What is your opinion on that? Like, is this a good thing? Is this a bad thing? What's the fallout?
Good thing or bad thing for the schools, or
for the fans, for the rivalry?
I think right now the fans won't realize how good it was until it's over. Just because of the unknown, like the thought of having to wake up on Sunday and your season's over and it ended in the Final Four to your arch rival. A lot of people just can't wrap their mind around that. But I'm at a point where I'm good either way. Would I like to win a national championship in Hubert's first year? Absolutely. Would I love to do it and get through Duke to do it? Oh, yeah. But this whole bragging rights forever and all this stuff, think about that logistically. How does that even work? Like, I mean, there are other games in this Carolina-Duke rivalry where you could say, you know, that should have been the game for bragging rights forever or whatever. I don't understand how a Final Four game would be the end-all trump card to the rivalry. If anything, it's just another chapter in it. And like you said earlier, now that it's happened once and we've broken the seal or whatnot, it's probably going to happen like every 2 years or whatever now. So we just need to get ready for it. And like I said, the NCAA, depending on the ratings that happen with this, I promise you, they will put Carolina and Duke in the same region in the next couple of years just to see if they can get them in a regional final or something. Because I wouldn't be surprised if we get near, well, that's on TBS, probably not. Like, I'm thinking Michigan State, Indiana State numbers for something like this, because they're really hyping it all week, but it's on TBS. And I don't know how many viewers they can get for something like that, but this is going to be one of the most watched Final Four games probably ever, I would imagine. So
I don't know how streaming counts and all that too, right? So
yeah, like, I don't know. I don't know how they count all that stuff, because I do have the March Madness app on my phone too. So I'm not sure, actually. I don't really know how they calculate that, but Bird Magic's the highest watched one of all time. Yep. And that was over 79 years ago. So I mean, it's been
but there were like four channels back then, so
right, exactly. So you either watch that or you watch the static or you went to bed. So
I think I agree with you. I don't think it's initially I thought that at first, right? Like, oh no, here we are, this trump card. This, it would be a little bit different, I guess, if it was for a championship, because then it really kind of is like, oh, you beat us for a championship.
Right? Even then, that's just for the offseason. Like, I mean, once the season begins, it's like a whole new roster for both teams. So you can't really, you know, really do it the way you would think in your mind.
I mean, imagine Duke. So let's say Duke beats Carolina Saturday, goes on to win the national championship. Next year, Carolina beats us twice. They beat us twice the year after that. They beat us twice the year after that. Are we going to be dangling this game, or
after we beat you in the Final Four,
Us 6 or 8 times in a row? I mean, it's a prisoner of the moment kind of thing. I think, you know, we've all thought it was an Armageddon doomsday scenario, but Sunday morning, the sun's gonna rise, you know, we're gonna wake up, somebody's gonna be sad, but you know, the rivalry will march on. It's not the final game, right?
And you know, honestly, I kind of feel like, and really, this will depend on what happens on Monday, but I was just telling a couple of Duke fans that we all know that I'm not at the point where I've seen people, you know, like Duke fans and like Facebook groups telling Carolina fans, hey, if you guys beat us, we're going to root for you on Monday night. I'm not there. I'm not there yet. And I don't know if I'll be there. Like, it, and I don't expect you guys to be there either. So,
nah.
you know, this is, I don't see me rooting for Duke against Villanova. Or
maybe if Kentucky was waiting on us, you know, there might be, at least I might be a little like, okay with it. Probably still not even then. Probably still not. But no, there's no way.
Maybe if Shire was head coach already. Like, I think for me, like, K is the brand, like, to me. Like, I mean, I was born in 78. He's basically been the coach my entire life. So, like, I've watched him, you know, try to figure out Dean Smith and then just take over the league and then going back and forth with Roy. And I've watched this dude flip from basically bringing in like 3-star kids and letting them elevate over 4 years into a unit and flip that on its end to bringing in top recruiting class after top recruiting class and still having success. Now, I'd be curious if when K's retired, if someone asked him which way would he prefer to build a team, I'd like to get an answer from him in terms of the pros and cons of doing it that way. Because he's really the only one that's been remotely successful at doing it. I guess you could say Calipari at Kentucky, but even that, Calipari, like this year, you saw he started going back to, you know, the transfer portal and bringing in older kids and that kind of thing. And then, of course, they get beat by St. Peter's in the first round of the tournament. So maybe he goes back to one and tons next year, too. But with NIL and everything else, that model is going to kind of not disappear, but there's too many other options for these young kids to go do. So you can't even really do that anymore. So K's getting out at the right time. I thought Roy was getting out at the right time too, where they can walk away and still enjoy, you know, life, you know, mm-hmm. and not, you know, just coach until it's the end or whatnot. So, yeah. So I don't think it's the end. It'll be the end of anything. If anything, it's the beginning of the rivalry. And again, I'm just so happy for Hubert Davis to be able to get this team to the Final Four. Nobody called it. Nobody expected it. But now that they're there, they don't feel like they don't belong there. Like, they feel like they're playing one, some of the best ball in the country with these other three teams. So it should be a really good Final Four.
I think so. I'm looking forward to it. A lot of big names in there, right? I think Hunter might have mentioned it on the group page over there about, you know, is this the most stacked Final Four? It's got to be up there, right? 17 titles. It's got to be. I went back and looked. That we're going to get into it a little bit later, but Villanova is kind of getting a little bit of a bump, but they have won the two recently, right? And then if they go back to the 80s and stuff, obviously they were good.
Yeah.
I mean, these other three.
To me, they're a blue blood right now. They're not a blue blood historically. Yeah, but
right, they're labeling this weekend as, you know, a battle of the blue bloods. Like, they have included Villanova into this blue blood club or whatnot, and they deserve to be there. This would be, if Villanova gets out of this, and they very well could win the national championship on Monday, that's 3 in 6 years.
Yeah. You know?
And we had a pandemic in the middle of it. So it's like, that's pretty damn good.
Yeah, it is.
To do that and to beat Kansas and then either Duke or Carolina at the end to win it, that's legendary, to be honest.
Yeah.
All these teams that are here, it's kind of crazy. But yeah, what he was saying about it being maybe one of the more stacked Final Fours, 91 immediately comes to mind. Duke, UNLV, Carolina, Kansas. Think about the coaches in that Final Four. Kay, Tark, Roy Williams, Dean Smith. Like, I don't know if you're going to get a Final Four like that, like, ever again. But I'm still mad at Duke for 91. So... that was one of my favorite teams of all time, and for Duke to beat that UNLV team, that hurts more than a lot of Carolina losses to Duke, to be honest. Like, that was just completely unexpected.
Yeah,
now I'm sitting thinking about that game again. I was like, ah.
Well, we did get embarrassed in 92. We had to take 30-point L in the title game. So
still the record. Still the record.
Yeah, so that's some motivation.
That's all I got.
My last question for you then is, will the winner of the Duke Carolina game, are they going to be able to summon up enough to go out there Monday and win a title? Or is that just asking for a letdown?
It depends on who they're playing, because Villanova only runs like 6 kids themselves. So if they get there, then it might be a little better for Carolina because of the rotations. It'll be more evenly matched. I'm worried about Kansas. I feel like if Kansas gets there, they're going to finish this off because they're deep. They've been under the radar all year. You don't really hear about Kansas a whole lot this season. It almost makes you think they had a down year, but they didn't. I mean, they're a 1 seed. They pretty much did everything they normally do as Kansas, and it's like nobody's talking about them. So I'm worried about Kansas coming in from the other side. But if it's Villanova that gets over there, I think Duke or Carolina would have pretty good chances in that matchup. It's the Kansas one that's got me a little concerned for either team.
Yep, for sure. And I wish that we played first, so that if, let's say, if we play first and Duke wins, then I can pull for Villanova. Right now, I'm in this weird space where it's
you don't know who to root for.
I kind of need Kansas to win just in case, right? Just in case I need them sitting there waiting on somebody. So, yeah.
With Kansas, I think it's because Self has just the one title and they've kind of come up short in the Final Four and in the championship game and all that so much that, like, I think people have just kind of, you know, that's why they're flying under the radar. People have almost written them off of, like, you know, he's just, he's not getting over that hump.
That's a good point. Yeah. Cause when I think of Kansas, a lot of times I think of early exits in the tournament, and that's not really fair, but that's kind of what just immediately pops to mind. So that's a really good point. And a lot of people don't even really think about Kansas, you know, with that title against Memphis from what, over 10 years ago?
Yeah.
2008. Yeah. So, I mean, I don't know. It feels like they've underachieved under Bill Self, but
it's like they're always here, but they only have three titles as a program. And when I looked that up, I was like, wait, that can't be right. And then I was like, yeah, it is. That is
88, 08, and probably like
one back in the 50s. 50
probably something. Yeah. Wilt win one like in the 50s? Did Wilt win one? I know we beat them in 57.
They won in 58, so he must have.
So, man, wow, that's crazy.
Yeah, it feels like they have more, like, being that kind of blue blood status. But
well, they beat us in the 88 one. Danny and the Miracles beat us.
You'll know this. How long did Roy coach there?
At Carolina?
At Kansas.
Oh, 14 years.
Yeah, 13. Yeah, right. 14. So the fact that Roy was able to win, you know, three titles at UNC and did, you know, was not able to win one at Kansas, despite being there over a decade. Decade and a half, basically,
and he had some. Just, he had some talent in Kansas too.
I mean, right. Oh, yeah.
Pierce, Collison, Pierce, and
that 97 Heinrich. Yeah, was, I mean, ridiculous with like Paul Pierce and I think Darren Collison was.
The last team that he had, that 03 team was really good. Mm-hmm. Or 02, 03, mm-hmm. whatever. 03, was that, last
that knocked
one.
Us out.
Yeah, yeah, they beat us. Yeah. Sweet 16. Yeah.
So that's crazy. And then Roy wins one within like 2 years of leaving there and coming to Chapel Hill. With Matt Daugherty's players. So, I mean, that's wild. I never really thought about that before.
Yeah, interesting little dynamic there. But, well, Dez, we appreciate you coming on, man, and kind of talking to us a little bit about the rivalry. It's going to be a big week for media. It's going to be a big lead up for fans. Plug what you got going. Where can the people find you?
So, my show, The Rundown with Desmond Johnson, runs live Saturday mornings, 10 a.m., WWBG, 1470 a.m., and TobaccoRoadSportsRadio.com. You can actually interact with the show while we're on. We don't do the traditional call in on the phone line type thing. We're on Facebook Watch. We're on YouTube. We're on LinkedIn. So you can actually watch the show, type in your question, a hot take or whatever. It'll pop up at the screen. We'll answer it in real time. This week is actually a supersized version because of Carolina Duke meeting in the Final Four. Normally it's a 2-hour show. This show is 3 hours long, starting at 10 o'clock. The guest list is ridiculous. We've got R.L. Bynum from the Tar Heel Tribune, Connor O'Neill, Chris Lee and Dennis Cox from the Culture State podcast and WRL will be on. B.Dot, the official sixth man of one of UNC basketball, he'll be on. David Glenn, he's going to be on. Isaac Shade, the Locked on Heels host, and Josh are going to be on. It's just going to be nuts. We're going to have a really good time and just kind of celebrate what we're doing here. And just enjoy being a part of this rivalry. Like I said at the very beginning, how lucky are we to even be a part of this? I see a lot of different other fan bases from other schools that look at us envious that we have this, that we've got a rivalry that's so big and so well known, but we're not out like poisoning each other's trees or, you know what I mean? Like, like committing like arson and stuff like that. Like it's not cordial, but it's like, it's respectful. It's like, we hate y'all, but we respect you. It's like a hateful respect. And
yeah, we need each other. Yeah.
And that's not going anywhere. Regardless of, I think it's in a place that's really good with Hubert and then Shire coming in and the succession plan from both teams mirrored each other. Kind of, there's no better place to be if you're a college basketball fan than to be a Carolina or a Duke fan this week. And more will start to embrace it as we get closer to Saturday. And then the state will fall in a sinkhole or whatever's going to happen. They'll loot Walmart or whatever's going to go on. But we'll worry about that at 11 o'clock on Saturday.
Yep. For sure. For sure. Well, we appreciate it, man. Thanks for coming on. And you know, everybody go check him out. It's going to be a big weekend. Tune in to the radio show. I'll be on there. You know, give us some questions and enjoy it. Both sides. You know, we're in the Final Four.
appreciate y'all having me on. I've been hearing great things about the podcast. I've had probably about 6 or 7 different people ask me if I was on this week. I guess you guys put it in a message board or something. So you guys,
I told really a few people, yeah. Traction.
Yeah. So, congrats to you guys for doing this. This is awesome stuff. And, anytime you want me back, just let me know.
Appreciate it, man. Yeah. Well, we want to thank Des again for coming on and taking the time to kind of give the UNC side of things and to just talk about the rivalry, the coaching matchup. What were, you know, your guys' reactions to like either something that he said or just kind of the buildup of the game itself? I guess, Ro, I'll go to you first.
Yeah, it's really interesting just to hear the other side's perspective, you know, and not in kind of some sort of Twitter argument, right? To hear somebody come on and really just kind of give a thoughtful, appreciative, historical view of the rivalry. And then another thing that interested me was just him talking about some of the things that had changed on the team, you know, that I hadn't maybe realized. You know, I knew that they had shortened the rotation. And of course, I knew that Dawson Garcia was not, you know, playing, you know, in the starting lineup anymore or whatever. But for him to sort of kind of lay out exactly what had changed, you know, it made it clear that what we're seeing now from Carolina isn't fluke. It's more one of those kind of almost accidental shifts that happens in the middle of a season that then leads to your team just really taking off. I think yep. Duke has seen that before, right? With like Zubek breaking out against mm-hmm. Maryland, you know, at the very end of 2010, Justice going to the four in 2015, just these little things that you don't expect. You expect them to have an impact, but you don't expect them to have the impact that they do that will propel you to a national title. You know, fingers right. crossed that doesn't happen for UNC.
Right. But it's that trickle effect, right? That defining a role for one person and then how that impacts the, like it sounded like for him, it was Caleb Love. Once they moved him off ball and then just let Caleb do Caleb, it kind of just like trickled to the rest. Like you mentioned Justice at the four, but what that really opened up for Tyus, for Quinn, mm-hmm. for Matt, for Ja. You know, they're legit. Here they are, right? Final four. What about you, Shu? Anything that stood out from what Des was talking about?
Well, I mean, I don't know if I disagree with them, but, you know, as far as the game itself being kind of a back and forth, you know, both teams operating in a high level, scoring, counter punching, it could go that way, and it probably will to go that way. Being in the building, I don't want it to go that way. I want us to get a nice 10, 12 point cushion where, you know, maybe my heart rate isn't through the roof in the last 2 or 3 minutes. Just looking forward to you know, being down there. I got my bags packed. I've had them packed for 2 nights already. You know, like we're not even leaving until tomorrow. So just ready to go do it.
Well, yeah. Both these teams. Go ahead. Sorry, I was just going to say both of these teams are playing pretty elite offense right now, and I'm not sure that I trust either of their defenses. I know Carolina's has looked good in the tournament, but when you start digging into it and you see what their opponents are shooting, it's like 36% from the field, 26% from three. So to that point, I could see it easily just being a high scoring game where neither team could stop the other. And one team just wins 85-81 when the buzzer runs out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because neither one of us has played anything that's going to resemble the other one yet. Like we haven't really ran into that kind of offense. We've ran into some really incredible defenses, not so much the offense. Whereas for them, they've played some decent offenses. You know, Baylor statistically, I think was like top 10. They were missing two guys too, right? UCLA is top 12, but they play a little bit slower. I think it's going to kind of be a different dynamic than what either one of us has seen in the tournament, right? Like, and Des talked about, well, we know each other. But I think this is the third game is always that kind of weird, like, okay, we played one, then there's the counter punch or the counter in the second one. And then that third one, it's kind of this weird, like double, right? And so, you know, hopefully it is what you said and we just get to kind of celebrate it. I kind of think it's going to be more of like, we just got to survive the first 20 minutes, especially you being there, survive the first 20, settle, come back, let's play ball.
Yeah.
Right. Like, you know, maybe it won't be that way. Hopefully not, but it seems like it could set up for that. But yeah, you know, I thought he touched on a lot of like really kind of key things about just the significance of the rivalry. He seemed not to kind of really buy into the kind of Armageddon thing. I'm kind of curious, like what y'all thought when he's talking about that in terms of just being able to move right on to the next year. Did y'all agree with that, or do you think we kind of sold it a little short? Where do y'all stand?
I don't think it's going to be as quick as that, but one thing that I did want to say was I think the rivalry will continue being relevant as long as the programs are relevant. So if one school was to have a down decade, you know, or more even, like, you know, what we've seen from NC State pretty much for the last 30 years, right? They can't create a rivalry with us or UNC no matter how much they try, because we just don't view them on that level. And so if one of us, you know, were to just fail to, you know, hire the right coach or just, you know, whatever, fell off for whatever reason, right? Then I think that ESPN is still going to be pumping up the games, but the fan engagement is just not going to be at the same level. And you've seen that already with years where one of the teams was bad, like 2010 or, you know, 2020 are obviously the ones that come to mind from our perspective of where they were bad, but it didn't have the same luster. And I believe that the ratings for those games were way down from other years versus like 2019 or, you know, one of the years where both teams were legit.
Yeah. Well, the 2020 year was the Trey Jones double buzzer beater. I mean, that was a pretty good game as far as the rivalry goes.
The game for sure. Yeah. But I think the buildup, them coming in, it was almost like a Duke, you can't lose this game, right? Yeah. These guys are awful. Like, we can't. And obviously 21, we were terrible, but yeah, we haven't had a ton. You know, I was talking to him too about, you know, those late 90s, you know, early mid 90s where we're 1-2, both top five, but it seemed like we were getting that consistently. And now just the way the state of college basketball is, it's going to be hard to replicate that, but we haven't gotten that really. The closest we got was 2019, and then Zion Chu blows out, right? We did get it in the ACC tournament. Chu, I think you were in the house for that one. So we got one at least. But outside of that, I mean, 15 were dominant. They're like still getting there, right? Those guys are still kind of setting the foundation for 16 and 17.
I think I died three times in that 2019 game in Charlotte. I mean, that was part of me is dreading this game because of that. Like, I could barely take that. Like, I was ready to just pace back and forth in the concourse, you know, at the down at the Hornets Arena. So, as far as the game, like the rivalry game, you were asking, you know, talking to Raul and everybody about it. I don't, you know, in the past, I thought it was like an Armageddon, like I said, a doomsday scenario. But, you know, this is Coach K's last weekend. He can only coach two more games regardless. You know, it's either going to end Saturday night or it's going to end Monday night. Nothing's going to tarnish the legacy. I mean, he's built what he's built. It is what it is now. I mean, you don't take away five titles for losing Saturday night or Monday night. So, like I said, I think we've all built it up to be, you know, this trump card, but the rivalry is going to go on. I mean, like I mentioned earlier, if we win and then they win the next 10 games against us, we're not going to be able to dangle this over their head like it's some trump card, you know?
Right, right. It's not for the title.
I think you made a really good point with talking about how, because it's K's last year, it's like we get to turn a new leaf no matter what, right? Yep. It's a new chapter, and it doesn't carry over in the same way it might if we knew K was going to be here for 10 more years, or worse yet, if K was kind of still establishing himself. Like, imagine if this was Shire's first year and this happened, right? And then he goes on to lose the game. Sure. Then he has that hanging over him for his entire career in a way that, you know, K is just not going to.
Sure. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and that's the one of the storylines that I don't think has been, and Des even kind of hit on it too, of like, we kind of feel like we're playing with house money. And my thing for both fan bases is, it's kind of the same, but it's a little separate, is this is K's 13th, right? But we should celebrate that. And this is what I've really been doing. Probably why I'm kind of calm this week, just happy to be here, right? This isn't guaranteed, right? We don't know how many John's going to get to. We don't know when we're going to get back to this. So really celebrating that. And I would caution a little bit of the Carolina fans too. It's his first in his first year, but it could be his last. You know, I don't think it will be, but you don't know when you're getting back, right? It's really, really difficult to get.
Probably here. Not getting a 15 seed in the Elite Eight again, but, you know, that's not to poke anybody, you know, but yeah.
I mean, yeah, it's hard to get here. So just enjoy it and just kind of for what it is. Now, if Hubert was to go on and win it and win it all, that's a huge kind of thing for him. And obviously for Kay, if he wins it and wins it all, it's the ultimate going out on top, right? You don't get to see that a whole lot. So that would kind of be pretty cool. But let's transition and talk a little bit about kind of the keys to the game for more of the numbers. Raul, I'll toss this to you and kind of just run us through some things that you've kind of seen in terms of, you know, how Duke can win this game or maybe how Carolina can win the game.
Well, it's interesting because I was looking, we talked about this a little bit with Dez, about how the styles of the teams have almost flipped. And that's even increased in the tournament. So Duke's three-point attempts have gone down in the tournament, though we're still really accurate. We're shooting 39%, so actually better than before. Meanwhile, UNC's kind of winning by math, right? So their three-point attempts are now 43% of their total field goal attempts. And that's top 50 in the country, or it would have been if they'd done that for the whole season. But if you compare that to earlier in the season, it was 38%, which is 163rd in the country. So a big difference there, right? And I actually meant to ask Dez this, but there was no real opportunity. But I'd be curious to how much of that is just the lineup change, just inserting Brady into the starting lineup and him being a three-point marksman just gets the attempts up. Or maybe some of it is Love being off the ball and feeling like he doesn't have to pass as much so he can just take more attempts. I haven't dug into how those players' attempts have changed, but they're playing a really interesting kind of very modern style, right? We really haven't seen a lot of college teams have success with that kind of three-point attempt rate. If you look at the top 50, it's usually just kind of mid-majors, right? Because they're trying to offset the talent disadvantage.
Mm-hmm.
Really, the only program that I can think of is actually another one in the Final Four, Nova. Yep. You know, they had a 50% three-point attempt rate a couple years ago. And so to see Hubert moving kind of closer to that ultra-modern sort of NBA style is interesting. And I'm wondering if it's just a product of their personnel and like how that shifted over the year and, you know, the lineups he's been playing.
And just the how teams have tried to defend them too, right? Mm-hmm. Did they just kind of all of this kind of happen at the perfect moment when Garcia left, Manic comes in and they completely change how they're playing to where teams aren't really running them off the three-point line, right? It's almost like we forget how good Bacot was, even when Carolina probably wasn't their best, like when he was really just putting up those monster games and he still got that in him. But I don't watch Carolina a whole lot. I try not to, right? Like it's to me, it's kind of futile to watch a team that I want to see lose that wins 80% of the time. Like I only have a 20% chance. So I try not to watch them. But I'd be curious to see if have defenses actually, are they trying to run these guys off the 3-point line or are they still playing the Bacot as like the ACC player of the year candidate, the you know, all American. And they're trying to really kind of take him away as like, hey, this guy can kill us and not adjusting to kind of what Carolina's doing. I don't know. I would just be curious to see what type of defenses they've seen in that regard.
Well, one thing that might indicate that they are doing that is that they're not running them off the line is Carolina's attempts are really high. Mm-hmm. And you don't attempt 33s in a game if you're not being allowed to take 33s, right? And if you are just jacking them up there and somehow still hitting 35% of them at that volume, then kudos to you. But another thing I saw was that Carolina is actually getting a fair number of its shots blocked compared to opponents. So that was like when I was looking like what they'd done compared to opponents, they were leading in basically every category, right? And as you would expect, they've been, you know, blowing out teams on their way here, but they're still getting a ton of their shots blocked. So it seems like teams are kind of packing it in against them a little bit, or they're just so worried about guarding Bacot that they've always got somebody in the lane. And then, you know, Love and Davis aren't the biggest guys. So if you can funnel them into the middle, you can block their shots. That might be a strategy for us, right? Run them off the line, funnel them towards Mark, but we've also got to be able to defend the drop-off pass to Bacot. That's the other thing.
Yeah. Or even if we're just going to kind of give him that, what we can't do is sag off the shooters. And that's what we started doing. That's when we kind of got blown out at the end of that Cameron game of RJ's just getting in the lane. And we're trying to like, we're playing him as a scorer, right? And we're coming in and we're sagging down to help. It's like, dude, if he finishes above mark, let him have that, right? Like what we can't have is the Manic and the Love and all those guys just getting those kickouts. If we can stop that, I think that would be, to me, that is the key, is RJ Davis is the key, right? Like Love is too inconsistent to say, you know, he might be 3 of 14, he might be 10 of 14. You know, that's just the kind of game that he plays. But if we can keep RJ from just being able to manipulate everything right there at the top of that defense, that's what crushed us last time. I mean, Shu, what are you thinking? What's for you?
Same thing.
How does Duke win this game?
Yeah, I mean, the same thing. You got to what way do you kill a snake? You cut its head off, right? And RJ Davis is kind of what's, you know, at least in the last game, he's kind of what stirred the drink. They ran that high. I'm hoping that they're not going to run that the first, you know, every play the first 20 minutes and we're not going to figure it out. So rebounding, taking care of the ball. I think this is, and we hit on it earlier. I mean, we've played them 80 minutes already. We've been the better team for 70 of those minutes. Come out there, play hard, play strong, play together, play smart, take care of the ball, rebound. I think it'll take care of itself. Hopefully, like I said, the last couple of minutes, I'd like to see a decent cushion where I'm feeling just, I don't want to see something come down where we could get our heart broken at the buzzer, I guess. I don't want to put that in the ether, but
yeah.
Lord knows that we've done it to them a lot. So, you know, it's like, let's just get this one.
Yeah, let's just take care of it. I really think too that make these guys play defense. We didn't do a good job of that in the Cameron game. We did a really good job of it in the game in the Dome, right? AJ driving, Dale driving, Keels driving. And now that Roach can be that guy, make these guys guard us going downhill, yeah. Right? Like get in there, make these guys move, especially Manic. Don't allow him to just kind of stand over there and just, you know, if AJ's not moving well off ball, he's just allowed to just kind of hang out. Run these guys because there's only five of them really. You know, they play about six, but there's really, it's that starting five and that's their butter.
I mean, we're shallow too, but you've seen how precarious their whole situation is, right? Baycott gets the two fouls against us. We destroy them. Then Manic gets ejected. They give up a 25-point lead. So it's just, they need everybody out there at all times. Whereas we could, in theory, at least survive a few minutes with Keels out there or, you know, or John or whatever, right?
Yeah.
But,
and he said it too, right? That like we feel like our starting five can go toe to toe with everybody else. It's how much do we have to get into the bench? How much do you force us to get into that bench? Is that's when they start to get a little uncomfortable. And credit to their guys, you know, against Baylor, those bench guys did come in and step up. If that happens, you shake their hand, right? But I'd much rather get those guys on the floor and see what we can do, especially down in the paint, right? We really got to try to drive, get some fouls, get those guys moving. We've seen that kind of Manic and Baycott are a little bit kind of prone when you put them in that position. Not that many people are putting them in that position. I think if we can drive on Texas Tech and Arkansas all night long, there is no reason why we should be settling for jump shots now. Just absolutely, that would be the most frustrating thing for me if we're just kind of settling and allowing it to stay close for that reason.
Yep.
Just attack, just go for it, you know, just go for it.
Yeah, it's like you said earlier, if it is close, you're leaving it up to chance, right? If it's a 2-point game with 30 seconds left, even if we're up two, like that's just, it's almost a coin flip. And we don't want to be in that situation where one bad turnover, one bad rotation, one hero ball shot, right? That's well, even if it's well guarded, right? Remember in the game in Cameron, was it RJ or was it Love who hit that kind of almost step back three at the end of the half to cut into our lead?
I think that was RJ, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think that was RJ. And you know, it wasn't insanely well defended by Roach, but he wasn't wide open and he was like 28 feet out. Mm-hmm. So you just don't want to leave it up to chance. Get a, you know, go into the final minute with a 7-point cushion or something and yeah. Just, and then we earn it at the free throw line, right? Yeah. And we've shot really well all tournament. So I'd rather take my chances on that than, you know, a kind of one possession, you know, fluke outcome.
Yeah.
So sure. One thing I want to bring up too, because that you guys had kind of hit on earlier, they're shooting what, like 40% of their shots are coming from the 3-point line. How much do you think the playing in this dome is going to affect that? Because we've talked about, you know, the sight lines, the vast openness. Does that play into our hands, especially if we do indeed try to just let's pound the paint, you know, a lot of baskets around the rim, take some threes, but let's, you know, let's get more things near the bucket where we have an advantage with Mark and Paolo as opposed to, you know, shooting a bunch of threes. And I don't know if we've mentioned it that I like, you know, I've always had the Wilson solution, the NCAA Final Four ball, but this year's version of it, it looks like the ball you would get at Burger King like 20 years ago, or the ball that has the pump built into it. It just, it's like super orange. I don't know. I don't like it.
Yeah. I think to your point that you were talking is, well, if we rebound, right? Sure. Like our defensive rebounding has kind of been like, we've had games where it's been elite, but throughout the season, it's been pretty inconsistent, right? So if they're taking a lot of shots and missing them, we got to rebound, right? Because if not, Bacot's just going to feast. Yep. He's just going to get easy, easy points off. And that's just super defeating, right? Like if they just keep doing that. I do think our style of play fits better if we're, you know, playing well. But, you know, again, it's the old adage of twos don't beat threes. So we're going to have to run those guys off, even with it being a dome and maybe saying, well, you know, they might not shoot as well. I would trust that philosophy against Villanova or Kansas, not this Carolina team, though. Just the confidence and the way that they're taking them and the amount. If they're taking 35, even if they take 40 of them, if they hit 15, that's going to be a close game. Like, that's going to be tough, you know?
Yeah, that puts insane pressure on your offense. You know, that's 45 points just from, you know, in your scenario, there are 45 points just from three-pointers, right? And it's like we've been the more efficient team than Carolina in the tournament. You know, we're shooting 54% from the field, 39% from three, 86% from the line. Incredible stuff, right? But can we really count on that, you know, for this next game? I mean, in theory, we can, right? Because Texas Tech and Arkansas were better defenses, but there still might be some variance in there, right? We've hit a bunch of mid-range shots. So you don't want to give Carolina a huge mathematical advantage. You know, we want to make it more that our personnel who can attack the rim are getting good two-point shots to their bad two-point shots. That's what we want.
Right, for sure. And we want Paolo to win his matchup, right? He's 0-for-2 in these games so far in terms of winning his matchup. That would be huge, right, to have him. And obviously AJ, you know, playing well. AJ's, and we've said it all year, he's the guy that could just blow a game open, right? I still don't think we've lost when he scored over 15 or something was the stat. He's the guy, right, to where, you know, he could just, and he played really well in that first Carolina game. You know, he was kind of doing things off the bounce. He was hitting shots. So, you know, hopefully that we get some big gains from either him or Keels. One of those guys could give us a really big lift as long as we get the consistent play that we've got from Dell and Roach and Paolo and Mark. Just feels like we might need one more guy at some point to step in there. But before we get out of here, I did want to talk a little quickly. And I kind of talked with Dez when he was here too, in terms of like, is this the most stacked Final Four? And I went back and looked, and he mentioned 91, and I do agree that one is heavier. But in terms of programs, though, UNLV don't really hold that weight anymore, right? Like, they really kind of just fell off the cliff after Tark and after those kind of late 80s, early 90s runs. So I went back, and there's really four that are probably comparable. 82, you had Carolina, Georgetown, Louisville, and Houston. Houston's kind of made the revamp, and that's why I included them in that, now that they've been really good the last 5 years, and they were really good back then. Obviously, Georgetown was just a powerhouse at that time. 91, Duke, UNC, Kansas, UNLV. 93, UNC, Michigan, Kansas, Kentucky. And then the only other one I really found that was probably compared is the 09, the Carolina, Michigan State, UConn, and Villanova. Michigan State is kind of they're right there. They've, you know, the one title, but it's really hard to find another one that matches up in terms of the programs, the history, tradition. Just pretty cool. Pretty cool. I'm not sure if y'all picked up on that or if y'all really looked into that much, but just curious on your thoughts on where does this Final Four collectively kind of stack for you?
Well, did you count it up? Is this the one with the most combined titles? Or I don't know if you did the math for any of the others, but it seems like it would be just looking at that list.
Unless you had like a UCLA with Kentucky in one, you know,
that's right.
That could 18 be or 19 back. Titles right there.
Right, exactly. Yeah, so any Final Four with UCLA might kind of, but then that doesn't mean the other two teams besides UCLA and Kentucky would be as, you know, because there's a lot of programs who used to be relevant back in the day and are not relevant at all anymore.
Yeah, and you that's know, what like I was going
San Francisco
for.
Yeah. has titles.
Yeah.
Like, you know, yeah. Illinois has titles. Just teams that you don't think about that have.
Loyola,
you know,
Chicago has a title.
Right, exactly. Yeah, I would have to go with 91 being the closest because you have three of the same teams, ironically. And then UNLV has kind of fallen into irrelevance, but they were up there kind of on their way to becoming royalty at that time, right?
You know, they're the best team on that list.
Right, exactly. You know, it flipped quickly. I'd still have to give this year the edge because Nova has accomplished more than UNLV ever did. UNLV looked like they were on pace to do that, but they've got, you know, the one title. They just have one total, right?
UNLV? Yeah.
Yeah.
90. Yeah.
Yeah. And so they have the one title and then they got sanctions and, you know, Tark leaves and everything kind of falls apart.
Right? Yeah.
Exactly. But Nova has had, you know,
they've really 85.
Been, right.
They beat
exactly.
Georgetown. So, yeah.
Yeah, like we talked about, and then they've got the other two under Wright, and they've been one of the best programs under Wright for the last like 15 years. Like, yes, you can look at it and be like, they've had two titles, but it's not just that. It's like every year on KenPom, you know, they're up in the top five. They finish the season with 3-4 losses, 1 or 2 seed. So I think they've established themselves in a way UNLV never did. UNLV is more of a blip to me. Same thing with Michigan, to be honest.
Yeah.
In the other list that you mentioned there.
Yeah.
Where, you know, they had the Fab Five and they had that little run and they had the 89 title right before that, but it was kind of like that brief period of, you know, relevance and then kind of falling off right after
that. Yeah. Yeah. I think really, like, and you kind of laid it out, you know, better than I did. But the only thing that I think would make it that we could change it to say, well, this one will be clearly better. If you swap Nova with Kentucky, then you probably have like the media and the TV personnel's like dream scenario of Kansas, Kentucky. And then it becomes the Champions Classic almost kind of deal, right? I know Michigan State's there instead of Carolina. But yeah, I mean, 17 combined titles, 11 just on our side is... It's impressive. It should be a great weekend to be down there and to kind of be hanging out. Hopefully we can do something special, you know, and get it done. It would be kind of fitting. It mimics 91 heading into it a lot to me, right? But that's also with some hindsight, but the biggest game is the Final Four for Duke, right? That was UNLV getting over that hump. This being Carolina, that's just a huge emotional game. And then going in and I'm picking Kansas to be there. You know, maybe Nova pulls it off and beats them. That could happen. I think it's more likely than they've gotten credit for, but I still expect Kansas to do it. And for Kay to get his first and last against Kansas after a big emotional game in the Final Four would be a nice kind of loop to that career. So I'm hoping for that, right? I'm hoping for anything that results in six, whatever happens. You know?
Well, we want Nova, but like you said, we don't know that until we beat UNC, right?
Yeah.
I saw Gary Parrish put up some spreads, right? He talked to a Vegas insider or something like for the various outcomes. So
yeah, I saw that too. Yeah.
We would be a 1-point underdog against Kansas.
Yep.
We'd be a 4.5 point favorite versus Nova. Carolina would be a 4.5 point dog versus Kansas, and they'd be a 1.5 point dog versus Nova. So 1.5 points is too close for comfort there, right? So
for sure.
I think I'd rather just go ahead and play Kansas as the 1-point underdog than have, you know, the possibility of the nightmare scenario of, you know, UNC playing Nova in a virtual coin flip game.
And it just felt like if that's what happens, then UNC's winning the title.
Yeah, right? Well, I hadn't thought about that until just now, but, you know, the Jenkins shot, Carolina Villanova, you know, the 16 title, that could, you know, where the symmetry is, it could end up being Duke, Kansas. It could be Carolina Villanova.
Nova, yeah. A lot of good storylines.
Yeah, all big
time. A lot of good storylines. Yeah. Yeah, I don't, we've, in the past, we've done like predictions and stuff. I don't want to do that for this one. Let it ride, let it breathe, enjoy it.
Don't you put that evil on me, Ricky
Bobby. Not putting nothing in there, not putting that out there. You know, so.
Well, you know, I'd be picking UNC. I'd be picking UNC to win because apparently that's our good luck charm, right?
Yeah.
Worked in the Texas Tech game, worked in a couple other games, I think, that I've done this year where I decided to go negative. So that would be my move. I'm just going to put that out there, and hopefully that counts as my move, and it counts as a good luck charm, right?
Yeah, yeah. I'll take that.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I feel good going into it, but part of it is just because it's the Final Four, right? Like, this is why this is what we play for. This is why we're here. All of this kind of, like, summer champs, recruiting champ, this is what it's about, is being here. And so it's Kay's last, you know, shoes. We've talked about it before when I was at his house of, like, I'm in it, you know? Like, I'm trying to just really soak it up because you don't know when it's going to happen again.
Yeah. But,
you know, we want to thank Dez again for coming on. You know, we're going to put his stuff in the podcast description. So if you want to go over there and check that out, it'll be linked down there for you. Sure, you got something?
I was just going to say, because I think Raul was asking me, or maybe you were asking me earlier, I am going to go to open practice. It's Friday at 2. Anybody that's listening, I think Carolina's open practice is at 1. Ours starts at 2. I think it's open to the public, obviously. Also, if anybody's listening is going to be at the game Saturday, I guarantee you I'm the only person that's going to have this throwback Johnny Dawkins jersey. I've never seen anybody else wearing one. So if you see like a 6-foot white guy with a Dawkins jersey on, you want to holler shoe, I'll turn around. I'll say, what's up. If we're at the bar, I'll buy you a beer for listening to my podcast. So, if you see me around, holler at me.
Yeah. Let's get the Duke fans together down there, make some noise. There's going to be a ton of Carolina fans, I'm sure. All of these fan bases should travel pretty well. Oh, I don't know about Villanova, but all the other ones for sure are going to travel well.
I have a feeling just because, like we said, with it being this, you know, Nova, Kansas, like this is going to be, it's going to be wild. It's going to be wild down there.
It's going to be a hell of a weekend.
And can't wait. It's not like insanely far for any of the schools, you know, it's not close per se, but you don't have a West Coast team playing. You know,
Nova's the furthest one away.
Right. So. Exactly. So.
Yeah. You know, I'm stoked for it, but, thanks for Dez again, you know, go check his stuff out. In the meantime, you know, rate, review, subscribe. It's a big week, you know, enjoy it, soak it up. You know, nothing but strong face and verve the whole way through. Let's go get number 6. Let's go Duke.